Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday, March 7th, 2014, and I am coming to you live from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. It is the ripe temperature of about minus 10 today, and we are starting to see the sun come up. We are starting to see the ebb of the darkness break into the light of the day. Today, we are going to be returning to gold. We're going to entertain the concept of the turning of a blind eye. And today we are going to continue on with our retooling for our coming of age. Now, I'm going to speak a little about greed. I'm going to speak a little about market manipulation. I'm going to speak a little about gold and where it's going and why it's going to where it is. And I'm also going to chat a little to you about the talking heads that profess to think or profess to represent that they are looking out for your best interests. Now, even though this is a bit long in the tooth, I still cannot tell you how much I am still in favor of owning gold and silver. It is, in fact, a place to secure your wealth, rather than a place to, rather than the marketplaces, which now are so corrupt and so far gone, they have, they make everybody turn their heads and shake their heads and roll their eyes. Okay? Almost every country on the planet is doing everything they can to manipulate their paper currency to facilitate whatever it needs to do at the time. So I'm going to read you some inflation numbers again about living in the U.S. because I suspect the majority of our listeners are in the U.S., but it is the most important economy on the planet. May not be for long if things unfold in the manner in which they potentially could. So if you live in the U.S., since the year 2000, that's just 13 years ago, the purchasing power of your money, or how much you make in salary, has lost 39%. And this is during a period when the U.S. Federal Reserve and the government claimed they had low inflation. Now, the U.S. Federal Reserve knows that the only way that they can get out of this economic pickle is by inflating their way out of it. It's the only tool they have in their toolbox. Now, this is mind-bogglingly punitive to those of us who buy things. And I'm going to read a couple of headlines in the news relative to that. Now, the U.S. dollars, the items that are denominated in U.S. dollars, the fact that your salary has lost 39% of its purchasing power in 13 years, and as we've made mention on other programs, it's lost 99% of its purchasing power since the passing of the Federal Reserve Act in 1913. So 100 years ago. Okay. So now we see the stock indices, the various indices all around the world, they're starting to have challenges. We also see the Russians and the Ukrainians having a big fight, a potential military conflict of epic proportions is looming on the horizon. We also have the Ukrainians inside the Ukraine saying, no, we don't want to be taken over by the Russians. And we see the Russians potentially saying to the Ukrainians, you can vote for a referendum that will have us take you over. So there's great political turmoil going on, military turmoil going on, and there the Ukrainian stock exchange is having great challenges with this. Now, in the course of all this, we are seeing desperately overt, not covert, not hidden anymore. We're seeing desperately overt operations in all of the marketplaces. What I'd like to speak to you a bit today is about how the marketplace for gold is being manipulated down and how whistleblowers, if you will, are standing in a place of saying, pay attention to this because it doesn't make sense that what is going on should not have somebody jumping up and down saying, this isn't right. So now when you have a price of gold in an economic situation that the world is seeing ourselves in, when you have the price of gold being manipulated to be kept low so as not to frighten the masses, you have a wonderful buying opportunity for those who are smart enough to see in terms of longer term and also see in terms of historic reference to gold. Gold has been historically the benchmark to which all monies have been pegged. Gold has been, at any given point in time, when either an economy or an empire has collapsed, it has brought about the demise of the currency because the currency became less and less and less backstopped by the commodity. Okay, now let's chat a little about maybe some wise individuals, clever individuals, attuned individuals, individuals that are paying attention and seeing what is rather than what they're being told to see. Okay, the price of gold right now in U.S. dollars is in the range of 1350 or 1370, whatever. It's in that range. And what is happening right now is we are seeing, as we have for a long, long time, we are seeing Asia, Chinese demand in particular, become more and more and more diligent in their pursuit of it. We're seeing the price of gold in Canadian dollars is $1,485, and in U.S. dollars it's $1,340, which is about what we saw. Okay, so now let's chat a little about this. The UK Royal Mint is running out of sovereign gold coins on demand. So you walk into the United Kingdom's Royal Mint, which is, its history traces back more than, get a load of this, 1,000 years. They ran out of 2014 sovereign gold coins as prices near a six-month low led to exceptional demand. The powers that be are violating the very marketplace in which we are playing and consequently skewing it in order so they aren't or are less exposed to the nonsense that they're playing. Okay, Austria's mint currently is running 24 hours a day as global mints from the U.S. to Australia report climbing demand for gold coins. Austria's Münz Österreich AG Mint hired extra employees and added a third 8-hour shift to the day in a bid to keep up with demand. Purchase of bullion coins at Australia's Perth Mint rose 20% this year through January 20th from a year earlier. Chinese demand year-to-date is 51% higher than demand at this point in 2013, and it wasn't light in 2013. So if demand for physical gold is so strong, how could there possibly be such a price drop as happened in this past year? And as I've been saying all along, there's a vile manipulation going on in all of this stuff, because if and when the current population, those who are smart enough to pay attention, cotton on to how these things are being manipulated, there will be a run on gold. And let me further explain. They have created a paper gold market that is hundreds of times larger than the physical gold market. Okay, by larger, I mean in terms of the dollar value of trading in these two markets. People trade paper that has more or less of a connection with gold, sometimes none at all, but nonetheless. And it is in these large markets that they set the price of gold. Now, most of the participants in these paper gold markets believe that they could, if they wished, convert these pieces of paper into physical gold, that the pieces of paper are claims on real gold. But in reality, only a very small fraction of them could succeed in converting their claims into real metal. There just isn't enough metal to go around. So now I want to explain a couple of things as we march through what's up in terms of commodity exchanges, futures exchange, derivatives, all of this stuff, and make it very simple. There is a farmer who grows wheat, and at the beginning of the year, he plants his wheat. In fact, planting will be going on soon, in the next couple of months, actually as soon as we lose the frost. But let's say planting goes on in late April, early May. And then the wheat crop comes up. This is certainly in North America, or certainly in the prairies here in Canada where we live. The wheat crop comes up, and they sell their wheat in the fall. So they harvest in late September, early October, and they sell it. Now, when the farmer, who goes out and borrows a bunch of money to have all kinds of expensive equipment, he wants to make sure that the price in the fall is something he can rely upon. What he does is he goes to a large bakery, perhaps, and he says, I will sell you all my wheat in September. And the bakery says, sure, I would like to know that I have a supply of wheat in September so I can bake my bread and make my goods, my baking goods. And so the farmer and the baker, or the farmer and the user of wheat, get together and they sign a contract that the farmer will sell all of his wheat at 100 units of value per bushel. That is a futures contract. And if the 100 units of value per bushel is something that the farmer can live with, and it's something that the bakery can live with, they sign that deal, and that piece of paper is now called a futures contract. Okay? Now, these futures contracts have been done in order to facilitate the farmer knowing what he's going to get and the baker knowing what his costs are going to be in the fall. That makes perfect economic sense. Now, the clever financiers have been involved in this market and in this industry for a long time. I was one of them. And consequently, they now have a piece of paper that can trade. And if everybody knew that the value of wheat in the fall was going to be 100 units of value, then that contract in and of itself would be worthless because you would be buying the contract to buy wheat at 100 units of money. But if everybody knew in the fall that wheat would be trading at 110 units of money, that contract would be worth 10 units of money at least. Okay? So now I want to chat a little about gold and the prices of gold. I'm going to go back to gold because gold, the derivatives on gold, and how the paper trail of gold and the paper market of gold is organized and how dire it looks to those who have their eyes open. Okay? Okay, there is a chart that I unfortunately cannot describe or cannot show you because we're on the radio that talks about the action of the COMEX, which is a gold exchange, and the primary price gold setting exchange in the U.S. And the key phrase on this chart is owners per ounce, which for the COMEX is now at, get a load of this, there's 111 owners per ounce of gold in the vault. That is, for every ounce of gold in the COMEX vault, the blue line, which is on this chart, 111 contracts exist that allow the owners of these contracts to demand delivery of that single ounce of gold. We all understand that banks operate with only a little cash on hand for all the deposits they've taken, and we call this the fractional reserve system. And the COMEX is the same, but worse. Percentage-wise, they keep a lot less gold around than the banks keep cash on hand. So let's wander into this a little more so it makes it a little clearer to understand, okay? The COMEX is a futures trading exchange where people trade gold and other commodities. Futures exchanges were created to be a meeting place between the farmers and the bakers, right? The producers of the commodity and their end users. Okay, both the wheat farmer and the bakery know that they can make a reasonable profit on their operations if the farm supplies and the bakery takes delivery of wheat at the prearranged price, as we talked about, right? This is called a futures contract, as I said before. However, the futures exchanges now are no longer dominated by the farmer and the bakery. They're now dominated by big money speculators who have no intention of producing or taking delivery of anything. And the COMEX vault is supposed to have gold to back up the gold trading that takes place on that exchange. And as I've just described, if we look backwards in time, the COMEX exchange had over 5 million ounces backing up the contracts. Back in 2006, and get a load of this, that amount has fallen by 93% to only 370,000 ounces as more people realize that they better stop trading paper and get their hands on the real stuff. Currently, for all the futures contracts to buy and sell gold in the exchange, they only have 1 ounce for every 111 contracts in existence. So these contracts are paper gold, and it's a huge synthetic supply of fake gold. If everyone decided to take claim for their real gold, similar to a bank run, only 1 ounce would be available for 111 claims. If that happens, it would drive the price of physical gold into the stratosphere. Now let's put it more so into context now in terms of daily trading. So in a day, 55,000 of these paper contracts trade hands. That represents, get a load of this, 5.5 million ounces of paper gold trade each day. And that's just at the COMEX. Okay? That trading sets the price for gold in the U.S., but it's possible that no one demanded delivery of gold from the COMEX on that same day. So the trading that sets the price is really for cash, not for gold. Does that make sense? Gold isn't trading hands. The paper contracts are trading hands. And this paper trading involves a lot of borrowing, which is leverage. One can easily prove this situation by contacting a futures broker and creating an account with $8,000 in that account, which I have in fact done. One could then buy or sell, if you sell it, it's called selling short, a futures contract for 100 ounces of gold. And at today's price of $1,340 per ounce, 100 ounces of gold is worth $140,000. So as far as the COMEX is concerned, you are using your $8,000 gambling stake to control $140,000 worth of gold. And this gold can be sold, driving down the price. Seems crazy, but it is true. It literally is true. So if you and I can control 100 ounces for $8,000, imagine what JP Morgan or Goldman Sachs can control with the many billions of printed money they've recently received from the feds. Printed money that has not been lent out to boost the economy, but is being used as collateral for trading by the big banks. They can push markets in whatever direction they want. And the same is true for central banks, but on an even greater scale. They have no limit on the amount of cash that they can print up, so they can overwhelm any market anytime they wish. This is where the powers that be, one, they don't want you to know how they do it, but two, have unfettered capacity to print money. All they have to do is enter it into the system. So the COMEX sets the price in the U.S. In London, it's called the London Bullion Market, which is the LBMA, the Bullion Market Association, which is more than, get a load of this, 7 times larger than the COMEX in terms of the dollar value. Now, the LBMA admitted a couple of years ago, like the COMEX today, that their leverage ratio was over 100 to 1. And the gold market in Switzerland, which is just as large as the LBMA, is run privately by the Swiss banks, so they don't talk about how big they are. All told, there are 40 futures exchanges in the world for trading paper gold. Now, another form of paper gold is certificates for gold accounts. So you'll go into a bank, say, I want to buy an ounce of gold, and they'll say, well, we have this certificate that says you're entitled to an ounce of gold. And in fact, I did this years ago in order to prove it to myself. I went into the Scotia Bank in Canada to ask for an ounce of gold, and they said, well, we will sell you a certificate of gold for this dollar, and it will be backstopped by the creditworthiness of the bank. And I said, no, thank you. I want an ounce of gold. And they had me sign about 6 or 7 pieces of paper, which was absolutely lunacy, and it took me 45 minutes to buy 1 ounce of gold, an experiment into buying precious metals. So several of these big banks, Scotiabank, I'm not sure if Scotiabank has been, but many of the big banks have been caught charging people fees for storing gold when they actually didn't have the gold at all. The banks figured they could quickly meet any claims for the gold, but when the claims came in, it took them weeks to procure the gold in the open market. Somebody at the Scotiabank, and it was an article written some years ago, said, I want to see my gold. And they said, no problem. Can you come back in a month? We won't be ready for a month. He said, well, no. I mean, you have it downstairs. I'm happy to go downstairs now. Just give me a clerk and we'll go downstairs. No. Come back in a week. Come back. So they were left floundering in terms of being able to show up with their gold. The Germans wanted to repatriate their gold. The Americans said, yeah, we'll do it over 10 or 12 or 15 years. They don't have it. And there are stocks that hold gold, options on both those stocks and on the futures described above, gold leases and swap contracts. So all of these are instruments, okay? Some are private contracts, and they may actually dwarf all the rest of the paper gold claims in terms of their stated dollar value, which we call notional value, because the central banks, like the U.S. Federal Reserve and the Bank for International Settlements, often use swaps for their trading. What central banks trading gold? Hello. The French central bank recently admitted, we are still active in the gold market for our own account. meaning that we are in the market nearly on a daily basis. Okay. So in that same paper that the French Central Bank put forward, the Bank of France said they owned 2,500 tons of physical gold and they had no plans to sell it. So what are they trading daily? Paper gold for profit is what they're trading. So here's an interesting article that was written recently by a guy named Ted Butler, did a bit of an expose on what happened to Bear Stearns about 5 years ago. 17th of March is the day that Bear Stearns declared bankruptcy. And he goes on to talk about, and the article is what really happened to Bear Stearns by a guy named Ted Butler. He goes on to explain perhaps what really happened to Bear Stearns people sort of chose to ignore, and that was it was actually bad trading in gold and silver that took them under. They had massive bets that the prices of gold and silver would go down, but instead the prices shot up by a lot over a few months. So he goes on to show in a couple of charts that their bet and their aspect, their position on gold, was punitive in their demise. Now, here's a couple of interesting observations. Makes you wonder whether J.P. Morgan was involved in both moving the price up to bankrupt Bear Stearns and then smashing it back down once they had taken over Bear Stearns and inherited all those bets that the price of gold and silver would drop. So all these contracts taken together, all these futures and swaps and holdings and paper, we call them derivatives because they derive their value from the underlying value of gold. And guess who owns most of them now? You got it. J.P. Morgan now owns over 60% notionally of all gold derivatives. What? Isn't it illegal to corner a market? Don't the regulators come down hard on anyone trying to corner a market? Supposedly. But as long as it isn't gold or silver, and as long as their own self-interests aren't threatened. J.P. Morgan is allowed to corner gold and silver because it serves the interests of those who still want the U.S. dollar to dominate the world, so that the U.S. can continue to exercise its ridiculous, exorbitant privilege of printing paper to trade for the real goods of other countries. So if someone like Morgan and the central banks weren't suppressing the prices of gold and silver, it would make the dollar and the other paper currencies look bad, and those in charge wouldn't allow that. Now, we're going to play history again, as we are wont to do on occasion. But it's very important to recognize that the powers that be are not stupid, and they do recognize how they control and manipulate markets, and they also realize how they need to facilitate what they present to the market. And just to show you how off base these government people are and economists are, Nixon took the world off what remained of the gold standard in 1971 in the Bretton Woods Accord. Okay, and his chief economist then was the great Milton Friedman, and Friedman told Nixon and others that gold, get a load of this, was deriving its value from the U.S. dollar, not the other way around, and that as soon as Nixon severed the link between gold and the dollar, that the price of gold would actually fall. Ha! Huh. Somebody who didn't know history well enough. He was entirely wrong, completely wrong. As government economists so often are, and gold never looked back again at its then current price of $35 an ounce. Now, again, it reminds me of a story that goes like this. The CEO is hiring an accountant, and he gives the accountant a bunch of financial information, and he has three candidates. And he asks the first candidate, what do these numbers tell you? And the first candidate says, well, sir, these accounts tell us that things are very bad indeed, and these are bad, and this is bad, and this is bad, and there are shortages here. And he says, thank you very much. And the next candidate comes in and says, well, sir, I've evaluated these numbers, and I see good in here, and good in here, and good in here, and good in here. And he gets the third candidate, and he says, what do these numbers tell you, Mr. Candidate, for the CFO position? And he looks at the guy, and he says, Mr. CEO, I will make these numbers tell you exactly what you want them to tell you. Oftentimes, the economists speak to the government or speak to the powers that be in order to facilitate the powers that be's agenda. Now, these government types have always hated gold for one reason, and it inhibits their ability to wage war. 1971 was the time of the Vietnam War. We've covered, and we've spoken about how governments started going off the very successful, historic, ancient gold and silver standards in order to fight World War I, in order to fight any of the wars. That war would have been over in a few months, but that wasn't good enough for the warmongers. They had to kill off millions more people over 4 years and then do it again in another 15 or 20. We will chat, and we continue to chat, about governments and gold. But one of the things that I wanted to talk and facilitate is that we know that comment that the gold price going into the stratosphere when people with all these paper contracts rush to convert them to physical gold. That will happen. It's not a function of when. It's not a function of if. It's a function of when. It's inevitable. And as more and more people lose confidence in governments, banks, and the blizzard of paper claims they have created, we'll start to see that the price of gold and silver will trade higher and higher and higher. Now, we oftentimes think of and speak of and reacquaint ourselves with how we retool by turning the lights on and by waking up. The historic ratio, I want to give you a couple of financial numbers. The historic ratio of the price of silver to gold has historically been about 16 to 1. Currently, it's about 63 to 1. It takes 63 ounces of gold to equal an ounce of silver to equal an ounce of gold. Are we returning to history? I don't know. Are gold and silver a place that can protect your wealth? I do seriously and brilliantly believe so. I think there is a call, if you will, for many of us to not be complicit with what is going on, but to stand up and take exception. We tend to stand up and take up exception by following something, a lead that one of our people speak to, and that's Jim Sinclair, and that is getting out of the system, subscribing less and less and less to a system that is broken. Do not be complicit, because being complicit in allowing this stuff to happen is saying that it is okay, and you are as bad as the perpetrators of this nonsense that are playing with gold. So we just chatted about how bad gold is. Now I want to chat about how the system is broken, and I have a wee clip to play you. And then I want to chat a little about how the clip pertains to the future.
Jack Abramoff may be the most notorious and crooked lobbyist of our time. He was at the center of a massive scandal of brazen corruption and influence peddling. As a Republican lobbyist starting in the mid-1990s, he became a master at showering gifts on lawmakers in return for their votes on legislation and tax breaks favorable to his clients. He was so good at it, he took home $20 million a year. As we first reported last November, it all came crashing down 6 years ago when Jack Abramoff pled guilty to corrupting public officials, tax evasion, and fraud, and served 3.5 years in prison. Today, he's a symbol of how money corrupts Washington. In our interview, he opened up his playbook for the first time and explained exactly how he used his clients' money to buy powerful friends and influence legislation.
The story will continue in a moment.
I was so far in it that I couldn't figure out where right and wrong was. I believed that I was among the top moral people in the business. I was totally blinded by what was going on.
Jack Abramoff was a whiz at influencing legislation. And one way he did that was to get his clients, like some Indian tribes, to make substantial campaign contributions to select members of Congress.
As I look back, it was effective. It certainly helped the people I was trying to help, both the clients and the Republicans at that time.
But even that was, you're now saying, was corrupt.
Yes.
Can you quantify how much it costs to corrupt a congressman?
I was actually thinking of writing a book, The Idiot's Guide to Buying a Congressman, as a way to put this all down. But first, I think most congressmen don't feel they're being bought. Most congressmen, I think, can, in their own mind, justify the system, rationalize. Yeah. And by the way, we wanted as lobbyists for them to feel that way.
Abramoff would provide freebies and gifts, looking for favors for his clients in return. he'd lavish certain congressmen and senators with access to private jets and junkets to the world's great golf destinations like St. Andrews in Scotland, free meals at his own upscale Washington restaurant, and access to the best tickets to all the area's sporting events, including two skyboxes at Washington Redskins games.
I spent over $1 million a year on tickets to sporting events and concerts and whatnot at all the venues.
$1 million?
Yeah, yeah.
For the best seats?
The best seats. I had two people on my staff whose virtual full-time job was booking tickets. We were Ticketmaster for these guys. And
the congressman or senator could take his favorite people from his district? To
the congressman or senator could take 24 of his favorite people from their district.
Was all that legal?
We would certainly try to make the activity legal if we could. At times, we didn't care.
But the best way to get a congressional office to do his bidding, he says, was to offer a staffer a job that could triple his salary.
When we would become friendly with an office and they were important to us and the chief of staff was a competent person, I would say, or my staff would say to him or her at some point, you know, when you're done working on the Hill, we'd very much like you to consider coming to work for us. Now, the moment I said that to them or any of our staff said that to them, that was it. We owned them. And what does that mean? Every request from our office, every request of our clients, everything that we want, they're going to do. And not only that, they're going to think of things we can't think of to do.
Jack Abramoff could sweet talk a dog off a meat truck. That's how persuasive he was.
Neil Volz was one of the staffers Abramoff was talking about. He was chief of staff to Congressman Bob Ney, who as chairman of the House Administration Committee had considerable power to dispense favors. Abramoff targeted Volz and offered him a job.
You're the chief of staff of a powerful congressman, and Jack owns you. And you haven't even left working for the congressman.
Well, I have a distinct memory of, you know, negotiating with Jack at a hockey game. So we're, you know, just a few rows back, the crowd's going crazy, and Jack and I are having a business conversation. And, you know, I'm wrestling with how much I think I should get paid. And then 5 minutes later, he's asking me questions about some clients of his.
When you look back, was that the corrupting moment?
I think we were guilty of engaging in a corrupt relationship. So there were several corrupting moments. There isn't just one moment. There were many.
That's it.
Okay. So this is Jack Abramoff, The Lobbyist's Playbook, and it's findable on CBS News. And what it speaks of and what it gives, it should give everybody pause for, is that the system itself is broken. And when people come up and when Jack went to prison for a few years and then he comes back and he chats about it. I mean, and now what he's trying to do is earn money off of his corruptness in order to pay back the tens of 20s or 30s or 50s of millions that he supposedly stole or compromised or went off with. But what is also relevant in here and relevant in this scenario is that the people who make the reforms when these things come up are the people who actually run the system. So this is when greed has run amok, and the people who are in the system are merely giving lip service to fixing it, giving lip service to changing it. So the people in government, and we have seen this and spoken of it at length, but I will reiterate, the people who run the Treasury, the people who are in the Federal Reserve System, and the people who bounce back and forth between government and the financial world and Wall Street are crossbred. There's nepotism going on. There is cross-pollination going on, and there is a joint agenda going on between politicians and Wall Street. And this is, again, greed run amok. Now, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, but my opinion is that the system is so broken, a new system needs to be put in place that carries next to nothing of the old system. Because again, the people who are making the reforms are the people who run the system. And this article or this interview is 15 minutes long, and it carries on to a place that speaks of how they would manipulate the reforms for their own needs. And I think, again, this speaks to the greed that is taken like a virus that has taken hold of the system right now. And I think it's unfortunately vile, but I think it behooves us all to pay attention to it. I'm going to chat a little about Britain right now and chat a little about how these moneyed people are now compromising the very purchasing power of your financial well-being, okay? So I want to read an article that comes from The Telegraph, which is a London-based paper. There's a study shows a near 2,000% rise in the price of beer over four decades. Economists warn that growing portion of take-home pay is being devoured by basic spending in shops, pubs, and at the petrol pump. The cost of a house seems to have gone through the metaphoric roof over the past 40 years. It's not the only commodity to have been rising. The price of beer has risen even more dramatically. A pint of lager has gone up by 20-fold, or by almost 2,000% since 1973. The average detached house in Britain, by comparison, went from £16,000-£17,000 to £305,000, a modest increase of 1,699%. So economists today warn that a growing portion of take-home pay is being devoured by basic spending in shops, pubs, and at the petrol pump. And the situation is not getting better. There's no doubt that the value of money has fallen dramatically since 1973. So this article goes on to talk about how we are losing our purchasing power. It also goes on to talk about how it is an invisible tax that the powers that be have implemented and hidden in plain view. And not only is it vile, it is something that the system itself has extricated the purchasing power from the vast majority of people. This is the demise of the middle class. And so what's happening also is that we're now starting to get, graciously, we're not now starting to get people who are unhappy with the way that the world gold market works, filing class action suits. This week, Kevin Marr is a New York-based investor in the gold and derivatives market. He's suing the five banks which set the benchmark, the Deutsche Bank, Barclays, Bank of Nova Scotia, and the Societe Generale and HSBC for collusion. These banks have commented, say they will defend the suit vigorously. And another bit of bad news for the gold market, for the gold powers that be, is the upcoming paper by a woman named Rosa Metz and her husband, Albert. This identifies a puzzling number of large downward price movements in the run-up in the afternoon fix. A conference call typically 10 minutes long when the bank exchanges information and decides on the price. Ms. Abrantz Metz terms the spike too frequent and too large to be mere chance. We're starting to see collusion. We're starting to see manipulation. We're starting to see stuff that doesn't jive. We're starting to see the lights turned on. And thank goodness, because in all fairness, we don't want to be complicit. We don't want to turn a blind eye. We want greed to take its toll and blow things up so we can get on with having a collective, cooperative, and conscious evolution into this new stage, this new state of being. We don't propagate commerce should end. We propagate that commerce should be transparent and that merchants and vendors in all aspects should be on a level playing field. The way that the government's run is brutally self-serving. And consequently, it has now come to the point where governments have the people that hired them, that voted them in, have the people working for them rather than the government working for the people. This is a disconnect. This is a violent, vile, nasty disconnect. And it's creating enormous, enormous economic challenges. And it's something that we should, in all honesty, in all fairness, and in all good conscience, we should act in order to secure our wealth, in order to reiterate how greed has changed things. And in order to act in a manner where we are not complicit with the nonsense that is going on, this is part of the quest for retooling. This is part of the quest for our conscientious efforts to turn the lights on. Now, that being said, standing idly by and doing nothing doesn't work. It doesn't work. It creates a venue where we have to ask ourselves a question, and that is, there are those who make things happen. There are those people who stand by and let other people make things happen. And there are those people standing even further back of the bus and saying, what happened? I don't want any of you who choose to listen to this program to be in the latter two. Make something happen. Make something happen for your health, for your family, for your wealth, for your well-being. We can do something. We can get out of the system. We can extricate our reliance on the system in a manner that doesn't allow the powers that be to compromise your economic sensitivities, and in all fairness, your military sensitivities, your freedoms. We have chatted, and we will in future shows, we will chat about the NSA and the spying and all the nonsense that's been going on as well. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to end the show a little early today. And I want to thank you for allowing us to be of service. And thank you very much for your attention. And thank you once again. I will see you again on the 14th of March. This is Jeff Dunphy. This is Retooling for Our Coming of Age.